Accession number 28750, Reel 11.
Or if we go on, you know, I can still stop it. Laurie Manton, Reel 11.
Things having worsened and the British troops being sent well into Bosnia to establish areas where they could perhaps deal with a lot of the problems that were going on. And indeed, the first British troops that went that way were commanded by Lieutenant Colonel Bob Stewart, the 1st Cheshire Regiment. Getting there was a feat in itself, and I never got used to the journey, because you would leave Split in a convoy, and then the journey there took you across the mountains, almost literally. And some areas, they just across the countryside, they created tracks for you to get through, and then you ended up driving for miles on the edge of a mountainside in a little road. And if you look to the right, you might see the most fantastic views of these lovely deep blue lakes. Spectacular. But because it was so icy, if you looked over, you could see UN trucks that had sort of gone down and crashed 200 feet onto the rocks. And we're talking difficult driving conditions, because I remember we were in one of the... We always went up separately in cabs of army trucks carrying supplies. And they stopped the convoy, and we stood out on the track, and there was a slight slope. And I suddenly realised that I was going down the track, even though I stood on the ground, because it was ice, say, 7 or 8 inches deep. And some of the vehicles were imperceptibly moving as well, because they were stationary and their weight was making them move, which leaves you no room to manoeuvre. And I remember saying to the driver, I said, what's the drill if you start going over? And he said, well, I'm nearest the edge. I shall just run across you and throw myself out the window. And I suggest you exit as well. But thankfully, that never happened, touch wood. But it was very frightening. But you're talking about a journey of 10 to 12 hours. And, that is a very long time. And having endured this, and I'm not the best of passengers anyway, I don't like being driven by other people, but you add in the ice, the mountainside and everything else, I always found it a great torment. But we arrived in Vitez, and we were put in the press centre, and we were able to sleep in there. The ordinary journalists weren't in uniform like we were, and so had to find their own accommodation locally. But if I can give you some idea of the situation, we arrived at the media centre, and we're in the entrance to the village, so there are houses each side of the road. And that morning, the people in the media centre had woken up. This is where the press were briefed by the Ministry of Defence. The house across the road, someone had come in the night and machine gunned to death an elderly couple in their 80s. They machine gunned to death and cut throats of a family, a Bosnian family, in one of the other houses, and hanged their pet dog from the telegraph post, so that was hanging there dead. And I think the people next door were killed as well, and that was just one night. But as you approach this area, everywhere you looked across all the hillsides, there was columns of smoke, and each one of these was a house that had been burnt down by the Serbs as part of their ethnic cleansing. So Vitez was still being lived in by the Bosnians, but they were surrounded by Serbs. But just getting there, And the thing I missed out was the fact you had to go through Gorney Fercouf, which was a real town that was embattled. And just a week or so earlier, a British soldier had been killed. He was a driver of a warrior infantry fighting vehicle. I think he was the first one to die.
Is that Wayne Edwards? Yeah.
He'd been killed at Gorney Fercouf. They sent a round down the street, and it had gone straight in and killed him. But you come down a long hillside into Gorney Fercouf, and as you come in at the start of the town, there's all sorts of fighting going on in the air, and there's machine gunning going across, which is quite unnerving. But there was a warrior infantry fighting vehicle parked at the side of the road, which was a checkpoint. And a woman, there was a woman officer who was leading the convoy, and she stopped the convoy and then ran over to this vehicle to find out what the situation was, and no one came out of the vehicle. They opened the hatch and they held a message written on a bit of cardboard on a stick, which said, "Run for your lives, you're under fire." So she ran back to the Land Rover, and we all drove off, and people were literally stepping out of the gutter and firing a Serb, firing a Bosnian on the other side of the road between the vehicles. So it was quite an interesting
You were in the midst of a gunfight.
Yeah. So we've arrived in Vitez, where the British troops, the Cheshires under Bob Stewart, were. And from there, we would, for the next fortnight, go out on patrol with the British troops. Well, in the old school, they created the headquarters for the British forces. And one of the classrooms was made into an officer's mess. So we were invited in to have a drink. And the only vacant table was one in the window. And while we were having our drink that evening, there was a gunfight going on outside the window, and they were killing themselves literally just outside the door of this room, but with a great big glass window that you're sat up in. And I just wanted to slowly ease myself down and get under the table and crawl away, but no one was bothered at all, because they'd become used to the dangers that were going on. But it was a situation where, a stray bullet could have ended myself or the photographer's life, because we were literally sat there in the window and in the light. So we thought, God, this is a bit iffy. So we got ourselves back to the press centre. And the next day, we were waiting to walk a little way down the road, back in through the back entrance to the British base, and then link up with a patrol. And we're both sat at the side of the road, and there's all this very loud rifle fire going on. And we looked down the street, and there were women, peasant women, literally running along, and gathering up their children and taking them to the safety. And we're sat there at the side of the road, sitting on our helmets, thinking, oh, this is bore, is it time to go down there soon? And we'll never forget it, because there was a very old man in this worn-out suit with a flat cap. And he had a bean stick with a bit of white fabric on. And he ran, bent double up to us, and said in English, "It's you they're shooting at." And we hadn't realised the sniper was shooting at us and missing. And we'd heard this whirring noise, which of course was the bullets going close by. So we flew across the road and got in the base there. Arranged we'd be picked up by a Land Rover, the entrance, and the guy on the gate of the barrier, said, "I'll just go and stand out there," and the Land Rover. And we got out there, and bang, bang, and we were sort of spinning around, wondering what the hell to do, because no one was no one else was running away, then we just had to stand there until the Land Rover came along.
Were you protected? Did you have?
Well, we had combat body armour, which was just there to protect you against shrapnel, shell splinters and the like, but it wouldn't stop bullets. We did have helmets on, but, you know, there's such a huge area of target with the two of us.
The British troops, what were their rules of engagement? Did you, you know, with all this shooting going on and their own men being at risk, what were they allowed to do?
Well, it's very difficult. The UN rules of engagement were dead peculiar and very risky. And that was, you couldn't return fire until you definitely confirmed you were being fired at by the others, which, you know, meant things were quite difficult. But I'm sure on occasion that a certain position might have been taken out by accident to stop Bosnian Muslims being murdered.
Did you see evidence of that yourself while you were out on patrol with them?
Well, I was just thinking of the first patrol was into one of the towns where there had been fighting, and that was in the stood up in the back of a FV-432, very old armoured personnel carrier. Bearing in mind it's 1992-1993, I'd been part of a crew of one of those back in 69, and they'd been around sort of 10 years already, so they were very old and very badly armoured. And it was basically probing to see how far the Serbs had got, and we were supposed to be sort of untouchable because, you know, everyone wore blue helmets and were marked with UN markings. And we went up round this sort of funny dual carriageway roundabout, and we pulled up, and I sort of leant forward to the commander of the vehicle and said, you know, what we stopped for? And he said, because there's a sniper firing at us. But you couldn't hear anything because of the noise of the vehicle. But they had, you know, tap, tap on the side of the vehicle from the bullets coming off it. So it was quite interesting to me to see that. My opinion was they were going out and putting themselves in the middle of the fighting and putting themselves at risk, but not actually doing anything to defend the people. And I know they have found that quite difficult. And I remember specifically a case, because they had a Queen Alexandra's Royal Army Nursing Corps midwife serving out there with the field hospital. And I knew her from Aldershot, and she was a friend of my wife's. And she'd come across a Bosnian Muslim lady who was heavily pregnant, who needed to get to the hospital on the other side of town, and was liable to have birth complications. And she spent a lot of time getting stuff sent over by friends to help this woman, not necessarily medication, but sort of medical supplies and such like. And everyone was heartbroken because she went into labour. She got in a car to go to the hospital at the other side of town. The car was stopped by the Serbs, and she was dragged out and shot to death, executed just like that, and the baby died. And it was just animalistic, the behaviour of these Serbians. Terrible situation. But that sort of thing was going on all the time, and it's, I'm sure it was very difficult and frustrating for your average British squaddie who just wanted to kill these murdering so-and-sos, but was prevented from doing so because the UN wasn't there as a peacekeeping force. It was there, laughably, as a protection force. So on the side of the vehicle it said UNPROFOR, UN Protection Force, But all they did was sort of get in between the two sides. Very occasionally, I know, they might slip someone in the vehicle to get them through the lines or to safety. And indeed, there was a wonderful play on BBC called Warriors, and that was so accurate. It was unbelievable. It's like being there again. But it was really a succession of patrols with the troops taking photographs and interviewing people. And it was interesting because they went right up further north to where there were some British troops, and we went out with a patrol. Now, this was just a standard patrol in minor fighting vehicles, very lightly armoured, scimitar fighting vehicles. First of all, on the first downhill bend, we're stood up in the back, and the tracks just slide and we go careering off the side. Well, normally they overturn and people get crushed that are sticking out, and we thought we would, because the G-force was such we couldn't get inside the vehicle. So we just, you know, the tops of our bodies were literally slammed onto the armour with the impact, but we didn't turn over. And we then went and parked up in some countryside, which was hedges, trees and open fields and such like. And there was a weirder sort of whirring noise, and it was a huge chunk of shrapnel that was coming through the air, which scythed through the trees and went away, so we knew we were close to the fighting. So because the job of these British soldiers was to see what was going on, and they were considered untouchable by both sides because they were UN, they then drove this lightly armoured vehicle straight down the middle of no man's land between the two fighting forces in the middle of a battle. And it was like a little bridle way between two hedges with explosions going on each side. And I just saw out of the corner of my eye the commander duck, and I heard him in the intercom saying stop, just as a grotting wire reached the photographer and myself, and we would have been seriously injured or killed. And it was a wire strung between two trees. It's a good job they saw it. That would have been
So they were sort of after these troops, it would seem.
They were after someone, yeah. And they'd obviously seen patrols go down here. So, you know, put two and two together, someone had some pretty nasty mischief ideas.
Well, what were you doing? Were you sort of reporting on what was going on, or were you doing your photography?
Well, doing photography as well, taking my own happy snaps, because my photographs wouldn't be used in the magazine, because I was there to report. But by actually taking photographs, not only was I indulging in my love of photography, but I was seeing it through the lens of a camera instead of stood there thinking I'm going to die any moment. And then we stopped, and they had a long conference, because they then had to go through this tarmac lane through the hedges, which went for about 7 miles, but there was a lot of Serb artillery who were tempted to fire their shells at the moving vehicle, so it's a bit like a duck at the fairground going along. And they drove at breakneck speed with, you know, explosions as they were missing as we went by, and then we got to relative safety and drove back to the base. But you'd find sort of oases of calm, and we went out to see the Cheshires, and we went out to a place where there'd been a big coal mine, and the armoured vehicle had broken down, and a Cheshire's officer came along and went, oh well, and just drove off and left them. And a Bosnian Muslim family came out and said to us, would you like to come in for a meal? So we all took our boots off, so we were in stocking feet, and went in and had a nice Bosnian meal that they cooked there and then for us. Or we do patrols onto the high ground, and you might find a family, not backward, but the conditions were backward. It was a house, and it might have an armchair and a kitchen table, and an oil stove as the cooker. But that was it. That's all they had in the way of contents. Very rural. But they were liable to be murdered at any time. Quite how they look so relaxed. I suppose you get used to the fact you're liable to die any time, and you know you need to survive and continue what you're doing day to day, that you you get over it. But we did lots of two-week trips over there over the next couple of years, and there were some interesting things came out of this. I can remember perfectly going into Gorny Vukuf on the journey up to Vitez, and on the left and right, on the side of the village as you went through in your armoured vehicle, there was two lovely houses with the children in the garden, and the lady on the right was hanging out her washing. It was fantastic. Yeah, what a sight. When we came back 2 weeks later, the washing was still hanging up but looking a bit grubby because it hadn't been collected. And there were mounds on the lawn because the Serbs had gone in and murdered the children and the mother, who were then buried in the lawn. But over the next year or so, I was frequently going past that, as then the washing became ragged. But you think, well, what on earth were the UN doing? Well, some of the other areas I went, you had countries like Kenya. They volunteered their soldiers to go and serve with the UN because it meant the Kenyan government got lots of money paid to it by the UN, which wasn't passed on to the soldiers. So we imagine driving along and finding a roadblock of sorts, but you look and you think, there's army boots in pairs stood by the side of the road, because they're African troops, they're not used to wearing boots. They took their boots off and they'd wander around in bare feet. They come out and say, have you got any food? Have you got any money? Their government kept all the money. They didn't have any rations, so they were starving. What use were they to sorting out the crisis? We left them and went down into one of the most picturesque villages I've ever seen in my life. And photographically, it was fantastic. You imagine in country life or things like this. And there was a central area, so the tarmac road came in, and there was all these cottages. And the road went either side of this tree, which had a wrought iron seat that went all the way around. And then different roads went out to the rest of the village. And you looked, and these lovely gateways with these rose arches. All the roses around. It was utterly fantastic. But behind those gardens, every single house had recently been burnt down and everyone murdered. So it was a dead village, but in bloom. It's shocking when you see that. And we started all the time coming across piles of people's possessions. So the serfs would come in and say, right, everyone in the village, grab what you need. So they grab all their family photo albums and, you know, their entire family history. Not unlike the Jews being evacuated in the Second World War. And they get them on the village green and they say, right, leave your cases there and take them around the corner and shoot them all. But then they tip out all the cases and loot what they wanted. So imagine an English village where they've got everyone out with all their photo albums and all the rest of it, and their family treasures, and then piled all those family treasures up, and it left them exposed to the elements for several weeks, dumped there in the rain and everything, and everything decaying, which was, started to have an effect seeing these things. And it, the contrast, when you went back to the UK, people saying, oh, yeah, they're just fighting and such like, and it was impossible to tell people how, or get them to comprehend how bad it was over there. And I still think it was utterly disgraceful. And you've only got to look at what then happened after that, where no one did anything about the massacres in Rwanda and all the rest of it. Utterly hopeless. United Nations, you know, I barely got a good word for them over this. But then we started doing things like go out with the Royal Engineers to photograph them at work. And it became surreal in a more threatening way, in as much as we'd be taken out to a village which was held by the Bosnian Muslims, and we'd go and have a coffee in a coffee house. And I can remember speaking to this beautiful young woman, and she said, oh, spoke perfect English. She says, I'm just back from the front. From the front. She says, I've just done my week in the trenches. You're fighting in the trenches? Yes. A sniper shot my fiancé. You know, I go up there and try and kill as many people as possible. And there was this great bitterness and single-minded hatred going on. And if you wandered around the village, which was peaceful because it actually hadn't been attacked or anything like that, almost every tree around the village had an in memoriam notice on it for someone who'd been killed in the trenches. And the British Army did have access to satellite television, so you could see the fighting that was going on this. But if you tuned in, for example, Croatian television, now they'd had three towns, Vukovar and two others, absolutely destroyed by the Serbs before they stopped attacking Croatia. Every night on Croatian TV, whereas we'd have the 6 o'clock news and a half hour regional news programme, they'd have an air of that day's fighting at the front, with the cameraman literally in the trenches, seeing people dying all around him, but all these people high on Slivovich, drinking the alcohol, and laughing and posing next to the bodies of dead Serbs. So it's almost as bad on one side as the other. And I remember getting back to, I managed to get up to Zagreb, and in Zagreb, which was a beautiful town, I went in their equivalent of Waterstones, and they were selling, and the price was fantastically cheap, A4 size paperback books, and each double page spread was the photograph of a dead Croatian and the story of what happened to them and the autopsy report. Now, I'll give you an example. There was an old lady, 80, who'd been run over by a Serbian tank deliberately.
End of Reel 11, Laurie Manton.